a global effort to help Japan's economy.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. The yen dropped 4% today after finance officials from the Group of Seven Developed Economies, the G7, announced a rare intervention in the currency markets. The G7 will act to weaken the Japanese yen, which has surged to record levels following the earthquake and tsunami. Marketplace's Stephen Beard explains.
The Japanese central bank began selling yen when their currency markets opened this morning. The European Central Bank did the same at the start of European trading, and the Fed is expected to follow suit. This is the first G7 currency intervention for more than a decade. It's a mark of international sympathy for Japan following the earthquake. The rising yen had threatened to eat into Japanese exports and damage the country's economy even further. Neil McKinnon of the VTB Capital Group believes the G7 move will pay off.
I dare say that the G7 may have to intervene again just to make the point with the currency markets. But if the G7 gets involved, there's typically been a much better chance of intervention proving effective.
The yen had been rising since the quake on expectations of a flood of money back into Japan. It's thought that Japanese insurance companies may have to sell their foreign investments and bring the money home to pay the multi-billion yen insurance claims. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
To the nuclear disaster in Japan now. The country's nuclear safety agency this morning raised the level of the crisis at Fukushima Daiichi from a 4 to a 5 on an international scale of 7. Marketplace's Asia Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz joins us now from Tokyo as we continue our coverage of the human and economic disaster in Japan. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Jeremy.
Do people trust what the government is telling them about the safety of this nuclear plant and the risk to the citizens of Japan?
Well, I was in Sendai yesterday, and that's just north of the damaged reactors. Nobody I spoke to about this said they trusted the government's assessment of the situation at Fukushima. Part of the reason is that both the government and Tokyo Electric Power Company, which runs this plant, have a history of withholding information from the public about problems at nuclear power plants. In Sendai, I met a business owner, Emi Sato, who told me what she thought.
I think they're hiding information about the levels of radiation. The smoke from the explosion went so high, and we've all heard that if it snows or rains, we could be impacted. So I think it's a little more serious than what they are saying.
And I should mention that it was snowing pretty heavily on us while she said this.
Rob, you've been traveling all across the country. How back to normal are things at this point?
Well, in Sendai, things are far from normal. I spent the day talking to local businesses, and they all needed the same thing. They needed gas. Like any developed economy, Japan runs on gas. Most importantly, trucks need it to carry supplies and food, and the region's gas stations are dry. In Sendai yesterday, cars were lined up outside gas stations for hours waiting for the next tanker to get there. Now, Sendai has a port, so you'd think they could ship gas there, but the government has closed off the port because it needs it to move relief items like essential food, water, baby formula, and emergency crews helping to rebuild this region. But we're not sure when the port will open for non-relief supplies yet.
Marketplace's Rob Schmitz in Tokyo. Rob, thanks for all your great reporting from Japan.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are up across the globe. Tokyo shares closed almost 3% higher today. For the first time since the financial crisis, the Federal Reserve is expected to lift restrictions today on banks that have passed the most recent round of stress tests. That means banks will be able to raise dividends and buy back shares. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow jumped 161 points to close at 11,774.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com. By Thomson Reuters, committed to empowering professionals of the world with the knowledge needed to do what they do best, the Knowledge Effect. And by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com.
Today, President Obama kicks off a five-day trip to South and Central America. First stop, Brazil, South America's largest economy, which has been growing like gangbusters despite the weak global economy. Dan Gretsch reports.
When Barack Obama was elected president in 2008, the U.S. was Brazil's top trading partner. Today, China is number one. Peter Hakam is with the Inter-American Dialogue. He says China has a voracious appetite for Brazilian raw materials, such as iron, soybeans, and oil.
Trade with China has risen something like 5 times in the last 10 years. It's really pulled Brazil through the economic crisis without much damage.
Exports to China helped Brazil's economy grow more than 7% last year. But Brazil, like the U.S., has a love-hate relationship with China. Susan Siegel runs the America Society and Council of the Americas.
Brazil is very worried about the competitiveness of the Brazilian currency vis-a-vis the Chinese currency, just as we are worried about exactly the same issue, dollar-Chinese currency.
Critics say a weak yuan makes it nearly impossible for manufactured products from the U.S. and Brazil to compete. Obama is traveling to Brazil with nearly his entire economic team. Syndicated columnist Andres Oppenheimer says the goal of the trip is for the U.S. to team up economically with Brazil.
The world is splitting up in major trade blocks. And if we don't team up with Latin America, we're going to end up pretty much without major markets to export.
Obama gives the keynote address Saturday at the U.S.-Brazil Business Summit, then moves on to Chile and El Salvador. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
And finally, New York City is in the midst of a fight with a unicyclist. Acrobat Kyle Peterson has been pulled over and ticketed a couple times while riding his unicycle on the sidewalk. He says one time officers sang circus music to him. So according to the New York Daily News, Peterson is suing the city because the law only prohibits 2- and 3-wheeled devices on sidewalks. The city claims there's no real difference between a bicycle and a unicycle. As for Peterson, he probably just wants to avoid having to walk to work in his clown shoes. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Covering the economy is a 24/7, 365 kind of thing. So every Friday, we get a little help from our friends.
We were sinking fast, and we had no idea whether the world was coming to an end or not.
Oil goes high enough, people stop driving, they stop buying cars, they stop going out to eat.
There are bumps in the road, but consumers are starting to feel better.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the Weekly Wrap, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.